Hi everyone, welcome to Lasses of Lore. In this podcast, me and my friend Claire will be discussing strange stories, folk tales, myths and legends from Britain and a few from around the world.
With the help of several G&Ts and maybe a bottle of wine or two.
So we're basically going to take it in turn to choose a story every few weeks to discuss, either a fairy tale, a strange historical incident, a legend, a myth or a ghost story.
I hope you like spooky tales and thanks for listening. Hello and welcome to our second episode of Lasses of Lore. So today we thought we'd talk about vampires. So as usual, we'll both speak about a little bit of history, a little bit of folklore, maybe a story or two. So to start off, what we thought we'd do today is consult Peter Underwood's Dictionary of the Supernatural from 1978. So Pete says, our mate Pete says, supernatural, resuscitated corpses that suck the blood of the living. That's a vampire.
That sounds pretty accurate.
Yeah. So the ancient Egyptians, Greeks, Romans, Assyrians and Babylonians all knew about vampires, and others considered that they really existed, whereas some of them thought they were just superstitions. So it's kind of the same today. Some people think they're real, sometimes people think they're just kind of a bit of a fantasy, and some people think that, sorry, that was the book closing. Some people think that, you know, vampires exist, but they don't suck blood, they're like energy vampires.
I think I've met a few.
Yeah.
They're meant to narcissists are known as energy vampires,
yeah,
right?
That's the one. Yeah, like, people, you know, when you go in a room and you look at someone, you're like, you are literally sucking all of the soul out of this place.
Yeah, all my happiness.
Yeah, it's all gone because of you. So yeah, there's kind of a few different versions of vampires.
I mean, recently I've been seeing a lot of things about, I'm going to sound really old now, but the youth are dressing up as vampires and actually think they have these vampire covens. And I've watched quite a few documentaries about ones in America where they'll all sort of file down their teeth to points and they actually drink each other's blood by letting it out a little bit, and they sort of think they really are vampires.
God damn Gen Z. No, I think they kind of started when we were young, actually. I kind of remember, you know, when like Queen of the Damned and stuff came out and it was all really popular.
Yeah. I remember, especially with things like True Blood and Twilight and all that, that people got really into it, and I knew a lot of people who dressed in that way. But I think like now there's a lot of people, I've seen a lot of things about these actual covens. I mean, it sounds weird because I think of a coven as being a coven of witches, but now these vampires call themselves like vampire covens.
I suppose it's like
just a collective noun.
Spooky collective noun. I don't know, really.
But, you know, I read a really bad case, actually, in America where there was this group who thought they were vampires and then decided they had to do like a ritual killing and actually drink someone's blood that they killed to become full vampires.
Really?
And they went on a rampage, and they stole a car.
Isn't that an episode of Buffy?
Well, it could also be, but this was an actual case. I can't remember the name of them, but there was a guy in the town, and he was a little bit older than them, I think he was about 22. And he had sort of, he was a bit of a loner, sort of outcast in high school, you know, as many of us are.
Myself included.
But he sort of got a lot of younger people in the town, younger teenagers, to sort of be really in awe of him. And he was sort of telling them, you will be a real vampire if we do this. And they stole the car and they went off on this rampage. And they ended up shooting a family that they came across at a picnic area. And then they drank some of the blood and then they thought they would become real vampires. But obviously they just got arrested and now they're all in jail for life. So at least they've been stopped. But I mean, a lot of the groups, I think, I know a lot of the media in America was saying, you know, the way they kind of went crazy about Satan worshippers a decade or so ago and saying everyone's in a satanic cult trying to take babies.
Marilyn Manson crowd.
Yeah.
Just for the record, I love Marilyn Manson. I've never killed a baby because I've listened to him.
Yeah, exactly. but that's what I think with this vampire thing. Like, I'm sure there are loads of these teenagers who are doing this. They're not harming anyone and they're just dressing up, having a good time. But it was this one group that went a bit crazy. So I don't think it's actually influencing anyone to really do anything bad. I think the people who are going to do those things are going to do them whatever influence they have, because
they have
that within them.
That kind of vampire popularity seems to come in like phases, doesn't it? Like, was it the early 90s? There was a bit of a vampire thing because there was the film vampires and things, wasn't there?
Yeah, and there was Buffy and Charmed had some vampires in it, I think.
Yeah,
that was
it
a
did,
very 90s thing.
I loved Charmed.
Charmed was amazing.
Charmed was so good.
I might go back and watch that again, actually. I haven't seen that for years.
When I was unemployed for the first time after I'd finished uni, I binged watched the whole of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and it might have been the best 2 weeks of my life.
Oh, cool. I don't know, I've never gone back to Buffy, because I don't know if you saw the one episode. I think it was called The Gentleman or something.
Oh, it was really scary, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and the guys who float, and you can't scream because they've taken everyone's voices in town, and then they cut the guy's heart out. And I watched that when I was quite young, and I had a bit of a freak out about it. I couldn't sleep with the lights off for weeks, and I've never gone back to Buffy since.
Oh, I feel
but I might give it a try now that I can handle, you know, these kind of things.
Between now and the next podcast, me and Heather are going to watch some Buffy.
Yeah, definitely.
But anyway, it kind of comes in phases, doesn't it? And then there was like True Blood and Twilight later on, and it's kind of gone through like centuries of this. Like the next story that I'm going to talk about, that's from the 1700s.
Yeah.
And that was really popular then, and then it got popular in the end of the 1800s. And
yeah, I think whatever happens in culture, we seem to come back round to vampires somehow. And same thing with zombies, I guess, and other sort of things like this. Or like there was that pirate phase, and when Pirates of the Caribbean came out, and it just goes in cycles. But I think there'll always be like a thing in the popular imagination.
Yeah, definitely. Right, first story. So we're talking about vampires, and obviously we all know the famous vampires. We know Bram Stoker's Dracula and all that. But I want to talk about one of the earliest vampires that was kind of known in England. Whether this is true or not, nobody knows. There was some research done into it, which I'll talk about later, but literally no idea.
I mean, centuries old research and
centuries
mythical
old
beings.
Research on it's great. The story I'm going to tell you today is about the vampire of Croglin Grange.
Croglin, that's a cool word.
It's a really good word, isn't it? It sounds really spooky and gothic horror-y.
Now, it sounds like a little like goblin creature. I'm a Croglin.
The Croglin.
The Croglin of the cupboard.
Do you think if you give the Croglin a sock, he's a free Croglin? Anyway.
Dobby is a free Croglin.
So, this story got really popular kind of in the 1800s, which is when like all the gothic horrors and the penny dreadfuls were really popular. So it could just be that this was made up to get Augustus Hare, who published this story.
Augustus Hare, that's quite
a good
name.
So he made this autobiographical novel about his life, where he's meant to know the family that owned this place. So it's meant to be around the 1700s-ish. So fun facts about the 1700s.
Oh,
now,
hit me.
So it was a bit of a funny time, kind of monarchy-wise. There was Queen Anne, who was she meant to be a lesbian?
Was she meant to be really sickly as well, though?
Yeah, she kind of lost it. And then there was the variety of King Georges, who were
All mad. Mad as a box of frogs.
Yeah. The best-selling book of the time was Harris's List of Covent Garden Ladies, which is exactly what it sounds like. If you want to get the best brothel in Covent Garden in the 1700s, you read.
Are there any good even places in Covent Garden?
I don't think it's known for its brothels anymore.
No.
And another fun fact, the biggest attraction of the time was a learned pig. We don't know his name, so if anyone knows the name of this learned pig, bonus points for you.
Oh, it might be like a Henwin from the Black Cauldron.
It might be, yeah.
You would tell me you had seen that, but like basically it's about a pig that has visions when it sticks its snout in water. And so there's this evil horned king who wants to get the pig to find out the location of the Black Cauldron so he can make like an undead army to like take over the kingdom.
That's a lot more sinister than I was expecting.
Yeah, but it's actually, it's like a really dark Disney movie, and it's one of Disney's biggest flops, and most people have never seen it or heard of it.
Really?
Because they sort of brought it out and were trying to do this whole new dark Disney thing, but no one was into it. But
I
absolutely love it. Yeah, it wasn't sort of popular, and people say it's the film that nearly killed Disney as a studio.
That's
we'll
really strange,
that.
Isn't it? Because now Disney are releasing those Twisted Tales books and things, and
it's kind of
popular to be dark. But anyway, this pig did things like maths and told the time and read futures, and a copycat in the States was accused of witchcraft and had to go on the run. So there's that. So back to the 1700s. Croglin Grange was owned by the Fisher family, but the Fisher family wanted to move on, and so they rented it out to some tenants who were the Cranswell siblings. There were two brothers and one sister. I don't know what the brothers were called. I couldn't find that out on the internet, I'm afraid. But the sister was called Amelia, and of course, like all gothic horror films or stories or whatever, Amelia is the poor heroine of the tale.
Right.
So Amelia fell asleep with her shutters unlocked one hot summer night. And she's struggling to get to sleep because it's so hot and sticky and horrible. And as she's kind of laying there dozing, she sees two lights from the churchyard across from her bedroom, because of course there's a church in the yard. That's obviously going to happen.
Oh, obviously.
Obviously. And they're getting closer and closer, and as they get closer, she starts to feel like this panic, so she runs downstairs and she locks the doors and all this. And then she hears this, like, scratching at the windows as though something's pulling the lead off the windows.
Oh, don't go near the windows.
Don't go near the windows, but she does go near the windows.
Of course, like any good horror story.
And there's this like, humanoid creature with big glowing eyes, and it's really scary. And obviously, eventually, it breaks through into her bedroom, and it bites her on the neck and what have you, and it runs away. So they just assume it was a lunatic, but she's quite injured, so they go to...
The lunatic's usually, like, lunatics break in and bite your neck.
Often break in and bite necks.
Oh, okay, I'll watch out for that.
It's the 1700s, you know. So they go to Switzerland for her to recover from her nerves, and eventually they come back. And they live there quite happily for a while, and then, shock horror, it happens again. So she's there, she still hasn't
learned. Oh, it swallowed her to... followed her to Switzerland. Followed her to Switzerland.
No, she came back. She came back to the house, she came back to Krogland, and it happens again, so... You know, same thing happens, it breaks in. But this time her brothers are kind of aware of the situation and they come with a gun and they shoot it in the leg. It doesn't die or anything, but it runs off and they follow it and they chase it down to the crypt. And they break into the crypt and everything in this crypt is smashed up and broken and there's bits of corpse everywhere, apart from this one coffin that's still intact.
Oh, don't go near that coffin.
You know, so they go, maybe we should be sensible and wait till daybreak to go and look in. So they wait till daybreak, and there he is, with a hole in his leg from the gunshot wound. And they take him out of the crypt and they set him on fire, and that's the end of that story.
Wait, so they... It could have just been a dude who had, like, mental issues.
Who was living in a crypt.
Yeah, like a homeless guy who's moved down there because it's warm. And they just... Did they ask him any questions before they burned him?
They just set him on fire.
They just went, oh, he must be a vampire.
He must be a vampire.
I mean, he's bitten your sister, so I see why you'd want to, like, sort him out. But, I mean, I feel like they should have maybe, like, had a bit of a chat before going straight to the burning.
Straight to the burning. Shine and burn him. So that's the story. It was kind of, like, loads of debate about whether it's a true story or not. Thought Krogland Grange wasn't a real place. It was meant to be in Cumberland, but then they found somewhere that might have been Krogland Grange that did have a church in the graveyards. There's a load of debate about whether it was real or not. But anyway, that's my vampire story, and it's very English. And it's...
So the guy who wrote it was trying to say this actually happened to me?
He was trying to say that he knew one of the Fisher family that originally owned the house.
Oh, so and he sort of heard it, this is what happened to our tenants.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a bit of a crazy, like, landlord story. Usually it's just like, oh, they haven't paid their rent.
Like, you get
no, they were getting bitten by a vampire and then they burned this guy alive.
And that's why they didn't pay their rent that month.
So get him evicted, story. Call the bailiffs.
So I say it's very English and it's got a lot of similarities to Dracula. Like, when I was reading it for a second, I was like, is this Bram Stoker?
Yeah, well, did that... When was Dracula released as a novel?
That was the 1800s, wasn't it?
So he could have known about this tale when he was writing that.
Because I think this was just produced as a little thing. It wasn't a big novel or anything.
Oh, like a Penny Dreadful-style pamphlet kind of or thing. Something.
Yeah, I don't think it was a big deal.
Right.
So that's the story. But I know around, like, the 1800s, Britain was pretty obsessed with vampires. Like, they were really worried about coming back to life and people had, like, cages built over their graves and... Yeah, it was a bit of a weird time for England, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I'm going over to sort of Eastern Europe for my stories. I've got a couple of stories. I mean, they're not sort of vampire tales, but they're sort of the inspiration for Dracula, among other stories. My stories are from, like, the 1400s and the 1500s. So I just wanted to tell you a few sort of crazy beliefs of that period, of the Middle Ages. So the first one is that there were small people inside sperm.
That's kind of true.
I mean, I know the DNA's there, but they thought there were actual, like, little babies sitting inside ready to, like, expand like a sponge.
Tiny, tiny people.
Yeah, with what you were saying about burials, actually, some people believe that you had to bury the heart separate from the body during this period for that same sort of reason of, like, resurrection and zombification or coming back to life.
It's kind of been a theme for many years, hasn't it?
This
coming back to life.
Another weird one was that a gladiator's blood could cure epilepsy. Although I'm not sure if they... I would have assumed that they were still thinking it was demons possessing you rather than saying it was a disease, but apparently...
How would they have got gladiator blood? Because surely the gladiators were quite a way before that.
Yeah, I don't know. Or maybe they mean, like, gladiators of sort of that period.
Yeah.
If there were people who were just thrown into fight, maybe they didn't call them gladiators.
Yeah.
Just, like, the blood of a strong guy who could, like, fight loads of others.
If anyone knows more about that, we'd really love to hear about it.
Yeah, if anyone can be bothered to do the research that I obviously haven't done. And then the best one I found was that evil spirits lived in Brussels sprouts, apparently. And I had no idea about this because every Christmas you have to make sure you put the little cross in the bottom of the sprout.
It's to make sure they cook better, right?
Yeah, well, my family have always said that, like, make sure you put the cross in the sprouts, otherwise they won't boil right. But apparently it's nothing to do with that, and it's actually to exercise the sprouts. Because people in England, I mean, we English people are great, used to believe that there were little demons inside sprouts. And if you ate one with the demon inside, you'd get food poisoning. So they probably got it from, like, bacteria, or someone was poisoned by a sprout once, and they were like, oh, must be a demon.
Sprouts make you fart.
It could be that. You'd have to expel the demon. But yeah, so apparently that's why we put the cross in the bottom of the sprouts. Isn't to make them boil faster or anything. It's to get the demon out. So,
I like that story. I'm going to share that with
you. Fun facts. Yeah, on to my actual story. So the first person I want to talk about was Vlad the Impaler. Now, I guess pretty much everyone's heard of this guy. Pretty famous ruler in Romania in the 1400s. And I actually went to Romania for a summer a few years ago. And I stayed in a little town called Brasov in the mountains. It's really beautiful there. Close by that town is Bran Castle, which was one of Vlad's, like, seats of power where he used to rule from.
That's amazing.
And all over the castle, actually, it's weird. You'd think they'd sort of emphasise the Romanian history that's there, but all around was sort of references to the Dracula novel and sort of popularising that and saying, oh, this was the place where the real Dracula lived.
That's good old England going... Yeah. What about this culture?
Cultural appropriation, yeah. We made up vampires. But it was really interesting. And Vlad himself, obviously not a true vampire, but he was sort of known for these really bad acts of, like, sadism and cruelty. Obviously at the time they didn't have the word psychopath, but if you read anything about him, he clearly lacked empathy.
Was he the one that was meant to... stab their victims through onto spikes and leave them around his gardens and what have
yeah,
you.
So pretty much he surrounded his castles with people impaled on spikes, hence Vlad the Impaler.
It's how I like to accessorise my garden or something. Joking. I really don't.
Just have people, like, lolling about on sticks outside. Yeah. But no, and actually the way he impaled people was incredibly cruel. It wasn't like a quick shove you on a spike and you sorted it or kill you first. He would, like, oil people up and sit them on the spike. Oh. So they slip down slowly onto it over, like, a period of days.
Oh, that's awful, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, it's pretty bad, but, I mean, at least he's being inventive, I guess.
Yeah, it's so sadistic, though, to think of that kind of level. But then again, like, you hear a lot of stories about torture and it's disgusting, isn't it? Like, rats eating people's stomachs and...
I read a thing about they used to sort of heat up a metal box and then put the rat here, so the rat's trying to get away from the hot stuff, so the only way it can get out is through eating through you.
Oh, it's really grim, isn't it?
But anyway, moving on from horrible torture.
Now we get away
well,
from
actually,
torture.
A bit more torture, actually, because this bit was quite interesting. In Antonio Bonfini, yeah, wrote a book called Historia Pannonica. I think I'm saying that right. Anyway, in that book, he tells this story of when some Turkish messengers came to pay their respects to Vlad, but they refused to take off their turbans because it was, like, an ancient custom for them to keep their turban on. So he claimed to strengthen their custom by nailing their turbans to their heads with 3 spikes so they could never take their turbans off.
They'll never be rude again.
Yeah, I mean, take your hat off inside. What are you playing at? Put a nail through your skull. Even though he did all this, like, horrible stuff, he's still considered kind of a national hero in Romania because, like, militarily he was pretty good and he did a lot of raids against the Transylvanian Saxons. Yeah, just sort of secured the region kind of thing.
I suppose it's kind of like Bloody Mary was a bit of an arse, wasn't she? But she kind of looked after the country, so...
Yeah, it's like you have to forgive people certain things if they've done other good things, I think. Yeah. Depending on the level of atrocity,
yeah, I mean,
but...
can we just... I would not forgive Vlad the Impaler. He was a dick. But
I mean, he was a dick to other people, but it seems like he was kind of alright with his people.
Yeah.
Well, although when they pissed him off, he did impale them. So, yeah, bit of a dick. Bran Castle is in Transylvania, which is obviously, like, one of the most popular sort of locations for most vampire things now because of Bram Stoker. And actually, when I was in uni, I studied Nosferatu.
Oh, yeah.
Like the 1922 version of Dracula. It's like a German expressionist film That's really good. It's got some, like, amazing shots of, like, the Carpathian Mountains where this all happened.
Is that a silent film or is that a...
Yeah, it's silent. Yeah. But, you know, the musical score is quite good. Yeah. And they tried some, like, new interesting filmic techniques. There's one bit where the carriage is, like, going through the wood, but because it's got... Nosferatu, or the vampire inside it. They sped up the film to make it look like it's moving sort of supernaturally. I mean, it looks terrible by today's standards, but like at the time it was quite good.
It's like that 1980s fantasy film Hawk the Slayer, if you ever seen it.
No.
The elf is meant to have like super speed when he shoots arrows, and all they've done is like looped it really quickly. It's so shit. It's a really good film though. If you like crap fantasy films, Hawk the Slayer is your one.
Oh, awesome. I'll have to check that out. Yeah, I love like really bad old effects, but yeah, it's something very nostalgic about it. He was basically the inspiration for Dracula. Like his people call him Vlad the Impaler, but his proper name was Vlad Dracula, and
oh, was
his
it?
Dad was called Vlad Dracul. So that's where he got the name from, I guess. But a lot of Bram Stoker's other inspiration for the story was from Whitby, which is a place I really love. It's sort of a coastal town in England.
It is in Yorkshire.
Oh yeah, also in Yorkshire. If you didn't listen to episode one, you probably don't know why we're getting so excited about that. But
we are both Yorkshire lasses.
So. And it is God's own county and the best place ever. So yeah, we get pretty excited when there's like Yorkshire-based stuff. Yeah, Whitby is a very sort of gothic place at night. It's got a huge ruined abbey and just like little winding streets and dark alleys and stuff.
If you go, you can see why it's so full of folklore, can't you?
Yeah, it's just got that atmosphere of like gothic feeling.
It's quite isolated as well. Like you can't, if you want to drive to Whitby, you have to drive through the moors and there's no way to get
the
there.
The barren moors.
And it is a bit, is it a bit creepy up there? It is.
Yeah, well, I mean, since the whole, like, Ian Brady, Myra Hindley stuff, the moors have become a lot creepier in my mind. So the other one I want to talk about, which is kind of similar in that inspired a lot of vampire stories, but was probably actually more accurately like one of the most prolific serial killers of all time, and that is a woman called Countess Elizabeth Bathory. And she was from Hungary. She was a Hungarian noble in the 1500s. And basically, girls from around the villages around her sort of palace or a castle probably, would go missing a lot over the years. And also, like, maids in her household and daughters of the maids or the servants kept going missing. And she turned out to have been, like, a huge sadist as well. She would take sort of their daughters of maids, and she's also said to have abducted a lot of girls as well. She was accused of a lot of things, and there were sort of several eyewitnesses who said this was true. Things like beating, burning, she would mutilate their hands, bite flesh off their faces, which is probably where the vampire thing comes in a bit, because she's like biting a neck, biting a face, pretty similar. Not that I've ever done either. She would like freeze the girls or starve them. She also apparently used hot tongs to torture the girls or put them in like freezing cold water. There's also a story, it may have been exaggerated after everything else came out, that she would cover them in honey and then put live ants on them.
Oh.
And other people have also like accused her of cannibalism. But again, that could be like sensationalizing the whole thing. One of the biggest sort of legends about her, and again why she sort of links to the vampire myth, is that she would apparently bathe in the blood of the girls, sort of bathe in virgin's blood to remain youthful.
Because obviously that's better than L'Oreal or Lola.
She's worth it. So this went on for years and years and years, and no one could really sort of say anything because she was taking sort of lower class people and she was a noble.
Yeah.
But eventually it did all come out and she was taken to trial. And there were sort of lots of witnesses for all this. And it was suspected that her victim count was actually 650 at least.
650?
I mean, that's like an estimate, but it could have been more, apparently.
So that's like several villages she took out.
Yeah, she just took out generations of girls. And I think it kind of got caught up in the popular imagination as well, because it's that typical, like, evil queen, you know, the rich woman who's aging and wants to be beautiful. Yeah, it's the same thing as, like, Cleopatra bathing in, is it ass's milk or something?
Yeah.
To retain youth. So the idea of, I know it's just that sort of trope that's quite accepted, as sort of the old, evil woman or aging woman. Yeah. Oh, same with, like, the queen in Snow White, right? Like, she wants Snow White dead because she wants her heart so it can, like, beautify her.
Is that what it was meant for? I thought she was just cross.
Well, I think part of it was because, like, Snow White was young and, you know, the mirror says that Snow White's more beautiful than her now, so it could just be rage. I think that's what it is in a lot of the tales. But I've read certain versions where she thinks, you know, she asks the hunter to bring her the heart.
Yeah.
So I've read certain versions where she eats the heart to, like, her youth back.
I heard one of them, it's like, I want her lungs and her liver or something like that as well.
Yeah,
it's
in one of the original tales, she wants, like, all the organs. Just like... Did you sign an organ donor register?
You're automatically signed up for that now.
Yeah. So a lot of the sort of tales of vampires came out of this, and the trial caused like a massive sensation. And in the end, she was arrested. But before she could be executed, apparently she came to the door of the cell and said to the guards one night, like, my hands are freezing cold. And they sort of said, oh, like, it's all right, love, go lie back down. We're not letting you out or anything. And then the next morning she was found dead. So really? Probably killed by some kind of illness or... But yeah,
it kind of seems like a bit of a tame way to go when you've killed all those people, doesn't it? It seems like almost like an anticlimax.
Yeah, like, I think a lot of people were sort of baying for her blood since she'd, like, taken everyone's daughters. So
yeah,
I think she probably should have had an execution, but obviously she beat them to it, or whatever disease she had did.
And that was that.
But yeah, so that's my sort of take on vampirism, and I think a lot cooler than the sparkly vampires of Twilight.
Yes, yeah, so I suppose that's it for us for the week. Yeah. We've nearly finished our bottle of Prosecco for the day.
So, can't record again until we get another one. Yeah. If you enjoyed this, remember to subscribe or leave us a comment or a review. And if there's any story you're particularly interested in or want us to research, just let us know in the comment.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
Today's podcast was brought to you by Heather and Claire, and we'd like to do a special shout out to Rainbow Strange for letting us use her tune Spooky Girlfriend. Thanks for listening.